Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Tom Hanks from the movie The Money Pit. How's it going, Tom? Did I just give a reference way too obscure for even Joe to realize?
Well, no, I thought we had a special guest star. I wasn't going to talk over Tom Hanks.
No way.
You're having all this stuff done to your house. And you said you couldn't read comics because you're getting all this stuff done.
And I'm just worried people are forgetting what Prime Day is really about and who died to make it possible. There's just a lot of things going on.
Bezos'
right now.
Soul.
And not only that, but offline we talked about how nice it's been these last 2 days here in the Minnesotas, only to have heat return and humidity return. And I can't turn my AC on.
And why is that?
Well, it's for the same reason you were alluding to at the beginning of the show. There, see, we've run a perfect circle. Yeah. Now, with all the spackle and mud and hole pasting going on, we can't turn on the AC because it'll just blow it all around and dry it funny. So we'll have one nice night of sleep, and then, so far they've filled the hole behind the bathtub. The hole was from the previous owner because. The house we bought was basically in one family, and apparently they didn't believe in shower curtains because they basically just, I mean, it was a little hole behind the bathtub. So they filled that, and then they started to repair the ceiling paint in our bedroom. And tomorrow they'll go on to paint. And the real fun comes when they decide to get into the dining room and tear down the blown ceiling and the 1970s chic wallpaper. Chic.
So but they're fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops your mind from wandering.
Meantime,
where it will go.
All I want to know, is there anything else to say about bat sex?
I think everyone has said everything there is. It was a fun little joke for a while. Question?
Where in hell's bells did that come from?
What it was, there was an interview with the people doing the Harley Quinn animated series. And somebody asked, well, what does DC, allow and what don't they allow because you're an R-rated animated show? And they talked about how, well, we were going to have a joke about Batman going down on Catwoman. And the people above us at DC said, no, heroes don't do that. And everybody jumped in, and we were having so much fun with the joke. And then Zack Snyder, who is about as subtle as any of his movies, he had somebody he knows draw a picture, basically of Batman going down on Catwoman, and tweeted it out saying canon. Now, we were having fun playing with it, doing jokes about it. I'm just going to show it.
Yeah.
And that's why I like some of them where Zack Snyder's movies, because he's not subtle. He doesn't get the joke. And it's a problem I have with a lot of superhero stuff now where it's, well, let's just, let's.
Well, you would think DC would have figured that out when everybody went nuts over the bat penis earlier, a couple of years ago. Although I did like some of the results, like Dean Rakim, he did a cartoon where Batman, I go down like my parents in an alley. And my other favorite was Tom Beelan.
Yeah.
He said, Batman, the Dark Knight, who performs oral sex, and it's basically the Batman 60s. Yep, and I do it again, and the other heroes are like, ah!
I, that's the thing, you know, these things, they kind of spread out and they're fun for a while. And even Jimmy Kimmel did jokes on it. Stephen Colbert did jokes on it. Trevor Noah did jokes on it. And then somebody comes in and goes, well, yeah, he does. Here, I drew it. Oh, well, thanks for ruining the joke there, buddy.
That was okay. Now we all have it. I mean, not only do we have a picture of haunted vaginas, thanks to Carol, the Black Witch, we have Lady Death banging her heart away the way every fanboy always dreamed her of in her own series. Now, not only do we have Batman swinging naked in the Batcave, but we also have him going down on showing his the crabs.
I thought that the grim and gritty movement in the late 80s, early 90s took things too far.
Yeah. Although Tom Beilin went again today. I'm trying to figure out where I hid the cartoon, but he had basically Batman talking with Galactus, and Galactus had, and the funny thing was they called it the coming of Galactus.
Yep, that was the name of the first story. Fantastic Four number 48. And I don't know.
The sad thing is,
I don't think we need all of the details about Batman's sex life shown in graphic detail.
Not a single complaint. Go figure. All I can say is what was the worst part about it was the fact that it was all played out by the time you and I got around to recording this here podcast.
Yeah.
And by the time it drops, it'll be 2 weeks old. We're going to sound like a bunch of old fuddy-duddies sitting around complaining about yesterday's news.
Well, that's the thing about these internet jokes. They move fast now.
Yep.
You know, I remember, about a year and a half ago, all the all the Tiger King jokes, boom. And then 2 weeks later, by the time I finally got to watch the show, it was, oh yeah, that's old news.
Yeah.
It's like we're all in high school now and everything's a fad that lasts, you know, about a week.
Although I did find one of my favorite cartoons of all times. If I can find it here on their Facebook there, because I posted it on their Facebook. As you know, as I'm working through my GCG NSP, the great comic graphic novel Sort and Purge, I ran across my favorite Mad Dave Berg Looks at Modern Thinking. And for those of you who have your copy, turn to page 115 under the nose. Now, this is how, you know, I've talked about how the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, it's how I learned about sex and drugs. This is how I learned about attitudes towards sex. So basically, the setup is there's two guys sitting on the beach. One of them's dreamily looking as all the scantily clad women drawn the way Dave Berg can draw them go walking by. And the other one's thinking, look at those girls wearing bikinis. They're teasingly hiding what our society considers sexy. In primitive societies, women go around with nothing on but body paint, yet their men aren't in a constant state of passion. Next page, he's looking at another woman walking by, barely wearing anything. As I understand it, in Japan, it's the back of the woman's neck that's supposed to drive men wild. Next page. Seems to me that's what's considered sexy is nothing more than conditioned reflex that each society sets up. So he's thinking further and further as women are walking around him. So in that case, what if our society decided that it was the nose that's the sexiest part of a woman? Then ladies with large noses would be considered voluptuous, and those with small, upturned noses would be considered underdeveloped and lacking in appeal. Furthermore, nose jobs would no longer consist of reducing the size, but rather enlarging it with silicone. And women, to show modesty, would teasingly wear nose bras. Small-nosed women would wear padded ones, and young girls would wear training nose bras. And then, of course, a moderately sized woman with a big nose wearing a Band-Aid comes by, and he goes, "Hey, look at that girl with a Band-Aid on her nose. Isn't that sexy?" And his buddy looks at him like, "What are you, some kind of nut?" I just absolutely love these cartoons.
Now, Mad's doing reprints. Oh, they are reprinting Dave Berg every month.
If I ever see a woman with a Band-Aid on her nose, oh my.
Now, when I was a kid, when I would read Mad, I would go, wow, this Dave Berg stuff is for old people.
Yeah, it depends. A lot of times it was the old fart stuff, but it was always funny because it was always the books. Well, I've only got one here. The other ones I got stored away. This is, modern thinking, and this is modern as of
the 60s.
I'm trying to find a copyright on this bad boy. 1969, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of still relevant today.
Now, when you were a kid, which did you prefer, the magazines or the trade paperback? Not trade paperbacks, the paperback books for Mad.
It depends on what I got a hold of. I did not mind the Mad paperbacks, but I wanted either just all of Dave Berg or all of Sergio. I didn't like Al Jaffe's snappy answers to silly questions. If I could get Don Martin, if it was the whole thing, I didn't want just a regular paperback with random stuff in it. For that, I'd rather just go to the magazine because then I get the whole spiel, including the folding cover. And if I luck out and get a special, sometimes you got those floppy records or a poster or a sticker. I still got stickers around somewhere. Where they, it was like Mad Magazine sound effects.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
It was all Don Martin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, of course, as long as we're talking superheroes, let's see if I can find the one. It's
Captain Klutz.
Oh, Captain Klutz was awesome. Absolutely loved it. But, no, it's Snap Poof-La-Doof. That's Wonder Woman releasing her Amazon brassiere.
Oh, that's right. I didn't like those because a lot of them, like the Sergio book, it would have one drawing per page. And you would read the book and it would be like 10 minutes and you're done. Whereas with the other ones that reprinted stuff from the magazine, I mean, that would take you like a day. And I was always about the quantity. Oh, you see, I could get the magazine for 50 cents, but for 95 cents, it's like buying 10 magazines worth of reading. That's why I always like the Mad Super Specials but more than the magazine, because reprints didn't matter to me until, I'd gotten older, and, oh, they're reprinting the stuff that I've already read. But they reprinted stuff from the 60s. In Central Illinois in the 70s, the 60s weren't that far behind because we were way behind the times. One of my friends from high school posted a picture of herself on a skateboard because she's, trying out a skateboard. She lived in California for a few years and, now she's skateboarding again because all the kids have moved out and everything. And we talked about how skateboarding came to Valley about 6-7 years after it had become big in California. The problem is, we didn't have the empty swimming pools or long sidewalks. We didn't have sidewalks. So we would skateboard the sidewalk going up to the rear entrance of the school and down. And at most, it was, I don't know, like 15 yards. So skateboarding came, and after about a month, it was like, yeah, this is really boring because we just up and down, up and down, up and down. Disco didn't really hit us until the 80s, where it was already dead everywhere else. We were slow behind the times, so if Mad was reprinting stuff from 5-6 years before, didn't matter, didn't care.
Or even because of all the reruns that would run. I mean, I knew Batman, I knew Star Trek, I knew Hogan's Heroes. So if they ran those, or if they, hopefully they ran a TV show or a movie that I actually watched or care about.
Yeah, because by the time the movies in Mad, you'd get them in the paperback book or the super specials, they were playing on network TV. It's like Towering Inferno. Oh, yeah, that played on NBC last night.
That's how I learned about Clockwork Orange. I saw the Mad parody first. We're going to pump your stomach first, then we're going to beat you up.
I saw Clockwork Orange in college, and I still remember coming out of it going, that was brilliant and really, really offensive. Just really, really offensive.
I was, and I
still feel that way. It's brilliant, it's offensive, and it's supposed to be.
I have like a Mad magazine thing that they sold at Barnes & Noble for like $10 that has all these things reprinted in it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is cool. Every so often, one of my wife's friends will, like, she sent me the Mad magazine currently where they're like doing Star Wars or reprinting Star Wars and stuff. I actually found in my vast repertoire of stuff a paperback, a soft cover oversized that reprints all six issues of the original Mad comic book.
Yes.
I have no idea where that came from. I'm keeping it, obviously, but I mean, it's kind of weird that I've had it for that long and never. Was that like an EC reprint or who did that?
Yeah, DC. Russ Cochran did the reprint. And then DC did archives. And then they did a paperback. I know of at least the first archive, maybe the second or third. And it's kind of surprising that they haven't done any other reprints of the comic other than DC about 5-6 years ago reprinted. All right, here's all the Wally Wood stuff from Mad the comic book. Here's the stuff from Jack Davis from Mad the comic book. Here's the stuff Will Elder from Mad the comic book. Now, somebody, Mort Todd, advertised that he was doing a reprint of Jack Davis from Cracked Magazine and John Severin from Cracked Magazine. And I was all set to buy those until I saw it was like 100 pages. $10 for 100 pages. It's like, no, I'm not paying $10 for a 100-page trade paperback of stuff that's probably going to be in public domain pretty soon. You got to watch your prices, kids.
It's all about the Pentium, baby.
So, now, does Joe know? When Dave Berg worked for Marvel, what was his specialty? Actually, he worked for Atlas, but what was his specialty?
Did he do covers?
Nope.
Oh, I don't know.
War comics.
Oh, that's right, because he was a war correspondent.
He didn't do any humor for Stan Lee at all. None.
I'm actually, I'm going to go in the very beginning of this book I've been talking about. Jerry DiFuccio, the associate editor, goes, Dave Berg was a war correspondent. Though he received his honorable discharge long ago, Dave still engages in everyday conflicts and continues the war of nerves, yours and ours. Dave says that life is a beachhead, so you must establish it. Dave says life is taking the high ground, so you must rise to it. Dave says life is a rear guard action, so you must go out gracefully. Yes, Dave Berg is still a war correspondent. Joyce Kilmer, he's not.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Atlas at War book. I don't see any Dave Berg. I do see, however, some Mort Drucker. Let's see, who else from Mad is in here? Well, John Severin, of course. Jack Davis. Jack Davis did very little work for Atlas because after Mad, he broke into he went with Kurtzman. Until Kurtzman's stuff all fell apart. Then he got into advertising. Then he came back to Mad. And once he got into advertising, his rates were way too high for Atlas. Trying to see if there's any other Mad people. Bernie Krigstein, who did Mad the comic book. Probably my favorite Mad the comic book story, the Bringing Up Father parody. Where on one half of the page, it would show, you know, the comedy where the mom would throw dishes at the dad. And then Krigstein on the other half of the page would draw the what would really happen to someone if that happened. It's like, oh, I have a concussion and I've broken my nose and being beaten with plates is terrible. But I have been reading, I've been reading a few things, and I thought I would bring them up. One thing I read Planet Size X-Men, which is kind of the, closes the first act of Hickman's X-Men.
Is that a graphic novel, or is that a...
No, it's a double-size issue.
Okay, I haven't gotten it yet, so...
And it's...
Be kind with the spoilers.
I'm not going to get into the spoilers, but thinking about the whole Hickman X-Men thing, Joe, do you think, let's say, you know, when Hickman's done, he puts toys back in the toy box, and the next writer says, hey, I'm going to do a story where the X-Men are captured by Arcade. Well, the X-Men have been doing stuff that's so powerful that it's one of those where, oh, we're in Arcade's little trips and tracks, traps, obliterate it in one panel, and he's done in the next. And I was thinking about, you know, one of the things that Stan Lee did that eventually bit him in the ass, and he had to change how he told stories. The Avengers would fight Power Man, and Power Man would, you know, be able to take him to the limit, and they just barely beat Power Man. And then they would fight the Living Laser, and the Living Laser would capture them, and they would have to figure out a way to escape, and they just barely win by the skin of their teeth. And then they face Whirlwind, and the same thing. And, you know, one other, and then after that, it'd be, well, okay, Power Man, Whirlwind, the Living Laser, and these other characters all team up. Well, if individually they were able to pretty much come within inches of beating the Avengers, all four of them should be able to beat the Avengers with no problem. But no, it was the same thing. You know, the Avengers win by the skin of their teeth. And he learned that what he was doing was progressively making the heroes more and more powerful and progressively making them villains more and more of kind of a joke, to the point where, you know, Power Man was able to take the Avengers to their limit. After, you know, they'd formed a group and everything, Power Man would show up at a comic and the hero would just kind of be, oh, it's Power Man. He's a nobody. Boom. And just, you know, he would be the secondary villain to introduce the hero's powers before he fought a real villain. And as I'm reading a lot of Marvel stuff, it seems like they've upped the power on all of the characters to the point where I imagine as a writer, it is next to impossible to think up a villain for the Avengers. Because, come on, they've beat the Celestials. They beat the Kree and Skrull Empire at the same time. They've beat Galactus. And as a reader, does that resonate in your head as, wow, these, no matter who they throw against them, they're going to beat their ass, so... who are they going to fight next? God?
It can, but it also makes it so that they have to really be cautious when they start playing with these cosmic ones. A perfect example is Iron Man right now, because he's going toe-to-toe with Korvac, and he's basically doing it himself because he doesn't want anybody else involved, because he realizes Korvac could basically just wipe. I think he's thinking Korvac's a lot more powerful than he currently is. And you got to remember, last time we saw Korvac, he pretty much killed everybody. And again, another skin of the teeth, everybody came back. I was trying to think of other characters where, like, for a while, Dr. Octopus was reduced to a joke. You know, Spider-Man basically read him the riot act that freaked his brain out. So anytime he would see Spider-Man, he would go nuts. Byrne used him really well in Fantastic Four for a brief cameo. The whole thing when their second child died. And, you know, they brought Dr. Octopus in because he was keen on radiation. Eventually, though, they broke Dr. Octopus out of that, and he became extremely formidable. If anything, especially with Superior Spider-Man, he kind of proved, I think, if you're always talking about who's the number one villain, I think Dr. Octopus by far. they're kind of doing some interesting things with Norm and Harry, but you know, when you got Baron Mordo coming in and you know, babysitting Harry, it's like, where do you go from there? Can Spider-Man go back to being just a street level superhero fighting thugs and stopping muggers? Didn't Nick Fury say, "Bitch, please, you've been in outer space"?
Yeah.
Which I guess was an improv line. Kudos to you, Jack, or Sam, or whatever your name real name is.
Well, one of the things they did on Spider-Man, they actually went through, and it's okay, we're going to do stories that up everybody's power. You know, the Rhino used to go toe-to-toe with the Hulk, and now Spider-Man can beat him in a fill-in issue. We're gonna basically revamp him. They did that with the Shocker, and who was the other big one they did it with? Oh, the Lizard. You know, they upped their power to make them more of a threat. But I think with long-running characters, the reader kind of gets to the point where, you know, Dr. Octopus, we still think of as dangerous because when he puts a plan together, it's a big deal. But back when the Shocker showed up, he was a top-level, beat Spider-Man's ass character. And now, even though they upped his power, he's still kind of a joke. You know, okay, he's got vibrating things on his hands and he wears a quilt. And is it the writer's fault or the reader's fault that these characters become jokes?
I would say probably the writer's, because we basically just read what they give us. You know, nobody's dying. Nobody says, "Hey, would you rehab Stiltman Tornado Man or Texas Ranger?"
Stiltman and Gladiator both showed up at the same time in Daredevil. When Frank Miller showed up, he completely revamped Gladiator to a guy who he's trying to go straight, but he just doesn't have enough money. The only thing he really knows how to do is use his, use the kind of the, basically the power saws on his hands that he created. And made him more of a threat, not by adding to his power, but by giving him more of a backstory and making him more desperate. Whereas everybody treats Stiltman like kind of a joke. Even though his costume is made out of adamantium. He basically wears adamantium armor. But we think he's funny, whereas if Gladiator shows up, because they've built in a backstory and they've built in why he does what he does, you take him more seriously because he's a guy who's got nothing to lose. So I think there are a couple of ways you can kind of rehab a villain. The other thing about reading Planet Size X-Men, and again, I'm not going to give spoilers, but I'm going to talk more about it in a whole. The Marvel Universe has become so science fiction-y that I think it's becoming harder and harder to relate to. You know, you mentioned in the movie where Nick Fury tells Spider-Man, "You've been to space." But Earth has been invaded 4 times in the last Marvel year by aliens. They've destroyed tons of buildings and stuff. And yet people in the Marvel Universe just kind of go on with their lives. Here, I always point to when 9/11 happened, that was 2 buildings destroyed and couple, 4,000 lives lost. And we as a country lost our minds. I think if an alien race came and blew up a city and invaded everywhere and all that, I think it would have permanent effects on society and the planet and the people involved. I don't think we would go right back to, okay, well, you know, they destroyed a town in Kansas, but man, I'm awful late for work.
So I was actually talking with my buddy Eric good old Turbo about this, because we were talking about just the whole death of Superman thing. And right afterwards, how Green Lantern went nuts. Well, you know, Coast City was destroyed. An entire city destroyed. I don't know how many people you
figure. His home city was destroyed.
How many people were in that city? And what's
It was written as if it was San Francisco.
What was the original ending that they were worried about? Carol shows up and goes, Pie Face has disappeared. Well, yeah, you think he might have been in Coast City? But then they revamped it and they let Green Lantern go berserker nuts. You know, where he just snapped. Which was really sudden in the comic world. I'll give kudos to Jeff Jones because he took that and made it.
Jeff Johns didn't do that.
Sure he did. And he did. Nope. Well, who did the parallax?
That he's was the one Ron who Mars. Came back. What happened?
He came
was...
out with the whole emotional ring thing.
Oh, Jeff Johns. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the original story.
No, the original story.
The guy who was writing it at the time put in, okay, we're going to do this story where the Guardians are changed and this and that. And they went, no, we want something drastic. You didn't give us something drastic. What we're going to do, we're going to have Hal Jordan go nuts. He's going to kill every Green Lantern and every Guardian. And there will be one Green Lantern left and it'll be this guy. And they brought in another writer to do it. And then Jeff Johns came in and did what everybody had wanted done since that story, which is fix it.
Was that? Yeah, and that was Green Lantern came in. That was when Green Lantern became Spectre, tried to redeem himself or something.
That was after Zero Hour, because remember, he sacrificed. No, it wasn't Zero Hour. Final Night. Final Night, he sacrificed himself to reignite the sun.
Yeah.
And because he had died.
I still, when I read my JLA Avengers crossover, you know, that was put all the toys back in the sandbox with the time Hal Jordan was Spectre. So he was the one who kind of separated the Earth that one last time. I'm just thinking. I upstairs, I have all my Green Lantern. I'm actually down in the Batcave right now. The Cray Cave, as we'll call it. No sex down here. Well, actually, you'd be surprised, because I got almost all my graphic novels out in the garage. The only ones I have are, I've got my runs of stuff put on the shelves down here upstairs. I got my omnibuses, some of the collector sets. For example, I still have the Shazam DC archives, which I kept. I sold off all the other archives. I just kept the Shazam ones. I picked up the 1970s Shazam. I had number 2 for some reason. The volume 2 where it reprinted the C.C. Beck 1970 run. I didn't have number 1, so I picked that up on the eBays. But like, I've got, you know, Strange in Paradise together, Swamp Thing together. I've got the Green Lanterns together, so I know which ones I'm missing. I ain't going to have a Hulk Omnibus 2 happen again.
Three. Three's the one you didn't order.
And oddly enough, what I found out I have 2 copies of Scud the Disposable Assassin, the whole shebang.
Ooh.
No, it's not that big a ooh. Because it's like a $30 book. And then I have things like Normal Man, Jim Valentino's thing. I have the original Slave Labor book. And then I have the Image re-release that includes a lot more with it. And I'm kind of attached to the Normal Man. I mean, because I love that book. That was an awesome book. And then I'm like, but I have the more impressive version of it. I have 2 copies of Superman versus Shazam. I have a hardcover of The Filth, including I also have a soft cover of Grant Morrison's The Filth. So, yeah, I'm just I'm having all sorts of fun just going through some of this stuff. But I did want to ask, Corey, if you knew about the following book from Innovation 1991, Desert Storm, Send Hussein to Hell.
Yes.
Oh, you do? Sweet.
Because Schinders, of course, had that next to the register.
Now, do you know what the weird thing about it was?
I do not.
Okay, so it had a 6-page story of Overkill, where Lieutenant Edwin Matthews is forced to jump into enemy territory to do aircraft malfunction, and then a 1-page gag strip, Iraqi and Abdu Winkle. Guess where that came from. The rest of it is all rebindings of existing printed books.
Yes.
So contents may vary as you pick copies up. I found that very interesting. So they must have rushed this bad boy out. And just to thicken it up, there's actually no price on it. I got a copy here. I picked one up.
It was mostly sold or given away through military PXs and stuff. And you could probably ask Dave Campiti for more information. But I know at Schinders, what we were told was that basically they commissioned a 6-page story and the gag strip and then used it to sort of jump their inventory to give soldiers something to read over in Iraq.
1891. It says this volume is not a reprint. This is in the, what do you call it? Inca?
Indicta.
I can't even pronounce that. But it says, this volume is not a reprint. It is a rebinding of existed printed books with original covers and staples removed. Contents may vary. It is an innovation publication.
Now, you weren't working
really poorly.
You weren't working at a place that probably dealt with a lot of this, but when the Iraq War started in 91, people would spend enormous amounts of money on anything that was semi-patriotic and had to do with war. Tops had the Desert Storm cards.
Oh, yeah, I bought tons of those.
Sold ginormous amounts of those. There were special magazines. Time Magazine would put out a special, you know, double thick, square bound. Newsweek, a special square bound. The Inquirer put out a special square bound. There were all these magazines would put out special issues with more information. And really, it was just kind of a repackaging of all the stories they already had because there was just a run. People wanted this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as it was over, we could not give it away. Boxes and boxes and boxes of Desert Storm cards. It was, okay, the war's over. People, like, instantly, poof, it was over. It was done. Nobody wanted anything to do with it anymore.
We don't need it.
I remember when I left Schinders in 92, they still had boxes. They were selling full boxes for $5, sealed boxes. And, you know, the way they'd seal them, they'd just take 2-inch tape, whoop, whoop, wrap it in a cross around it, slap a Schinders $5 special sticker on it. Just try to get rid of this stuff. And I always thought it was weird how fast that happened. Because Marvel and DC, I don't even think they had time to get anything out involved in that. I know the WWE, they got in a lot of trouble. That was the year WrestleMania. As they're leading up to WrestleMania, Vince hires Sergeant Slaughter back. And Joe, do you remember why Sergeant Slaughter was fired?
I don't.
Getting caught with the drugs.
Oh, you know, I think there was that brief moment when Hulk disappeared and Ultimate Warrior, they tried to pass off to Ultimate Warrior
that was Hogan taking time off for the birth of a child.
Yeah, I was pretty much out of wrestling then.
Well, they were building
jump back in until we started connecting at the comic shop.
They were building toward Hogan Warrior 2. And they'd got the football field in Los Angeles. And then as we're building up to the Iraq War, Vince McMahon calls Sergeant Slaughter and says, hey, you know, I'd like you to come back. Here's the story we're going to do. You're going to become an Iraqi sympathizer. You and the Iron Sheik are going to be, you know, go Iraq, and Hulk Hogan's going to be go America, and then at WrestleMania, he's going to beat the tar out of you. And Sergeant Slaughter was like, Vince, I've got a contract with G.I. Joe. I've got this and I've got this. And Vince basically backed a dump truck full of money up to his house. And they started the build. And the problem was they started the build before the war. And most people don't remember this. We really didn't think we would go to war. We really thought, you know, oh, we'll send troops over there and Saddam Hussein will back down. But nope, we went to war, and as soon as we went to war, ticket sales on that thing just died. And at the time, they said, oh, we have to leave the football stadium and go to this smaller venue because of bomb threats and threats of violence. No, it's because they'd only sold like 10,000 tickets, and they had a 70,000-seat stadium to fill. So then after Hogan beat him and after the war, that's when we get these famous Sergeant Slaughter, I want my country back.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. He was crying, I want my country back, and then he disappeared as far as I remember.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I've been reading, I talked about it a little last week. I'm sitting down to read Future's End, which is a the DC 52 weekly series. Joe, did you ever read Future's End?
Nope, I passed.
You know what the plot of Future's End is?
I know the end result was they brought back the people that apparently created the multiverse, people we'd never heard before that are so ungodly powerful. I don't know if they defeated them or they just said, hey, or whatever. No one could ever really explain to me what was going on.
Well, I'm halfway through. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, huh, I don't remember this. I don't remember this. You know, I dropped out of the new 52 by then.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I think I was describing the dark metal.
Yeah, cross.
You're 52. No, we talked about what 52 was supposed to be.
Well, there was 52.
I don't know what it turned into.
There was 52. Huge success. Then Countdown to Countdown, which then became Countdown to Final Crisis, which completely went off the rails to the point where Dan DiDio had to fly over to Scotland to apologize to Grant Morrison, because Countdown was supposed to lead up to Final Crisis, and Morrison had given him a whole bunch of stuff. Here's where you need to end at. And the people involved in Countdown, oh, it went off the rails, and it had nothing to do with any of the stuff that he'd done. And Starlin's Death of the New Gods did not tie in at all in any way, shape, or form. So they had to, we're sorry, Grant, we're going to figure out a way so that your story works. So afterward, they're going to do another weekly series, and that was Future's End. And I got about halfway through, and it's like, this, there's all this stuff going on that I don't remember. So I go and I look, and it's set 5 years in the future of the new 52. They don't say that in the comic. How did you find out about it? Well, it was in all the stuff leading up to it, and all the press releases and the interviews with the creators, but in the comic, no. And that's not the That may be the first time DC did it, but it's not the first time I've run into it. I picked up Deceased. I'm reading Deceased and go, wow, they're really going far with this. I wonder if this is, you know, how they're going to fix this. And they don't. At the end of the story, they don't. I have to go online and I read, and nowhere does it say, oh, this is a different universe than the main universe. They don't say it in the story. They don't say it in the trade paperback. They don't say it anywhere. Now, DC used to do things like they would say, oh, this is an Elseworlds. But Elseworlds is gone. They don't use that anymore. The new Justice League miniseries by Chip Zdarsky. I just picked it up, started reading it, had no idea. Oh, this is set in the future too, because I'm reading it going, wow, Batman and Robin are not anything like what they are in their regular books. I wonder if Chip Zdarsky didn't, you know, he's not following up, or if this sat on a shelf for a long time. No, it's set in the far future, but they don't say it anywhere in the comic.
Yeah, now, it's almost like DC is kind of Because I was talking again. Eric mentioned this because he says a lot of his friends are getting to the point where they're getting fed up reading anything DC because they pick up something and they're like, they understand the concept of the multiverse, much to, you know, the chagrin of the 1980s crisis editors. But they don't know where this happens. Is it in the Batman universe? Is it its own universe? Does this tie into the other thing? Are the stories supposed to? Now, DC has set up everybody very well to accept the multiverse, especially with, you know, the crisis on Infinite Earths that they did on the CW, where they pretty much admitted all the movie universes exist. And now with the aforementioned dark whatever, metal, heavy metal, whatever, let's hit metal something. Whoever these ultra-powerful characters are that created the multiverse are back, and they allowed them. Now everything's a multiverse. It doesn't matter what the story is. If it doesn't make sense, it occurred in a different multiverse. But DC is not explicitly saying that. So you may pick up a book and not know what in hell's bells is going on. I was reading somewhere online where they're like, yeah, even Dr. Manhattan's a piker compared to these characters that got introduced that broke their way through the source wall and into the multiverse and whatever. But it's just, you know, that's fine if you're going to do a cool story that takes place by itself, but you really got to put a little header on the beginning of it. Even a TV show or something, you know, this takes place 5 months after the last one, or in the case of, like, if you remember the old Sledgehammer show that they didn't think would get renewed, so they ended it on a cliffhanger where Sledgehammer accidentally set off a nuclear weapon. Well, it just so happened ABC kind of liked the demographics, so they came back and they renewed it. And it was like the creators were like, oh, well, that wasn't part of the joke. Okay, this episode takes place 5 years before the other one, which is when I tuned out. Cause I really. And the weird thing is what DC pissed away, and they're just like, this doesn't make multiverse. What's Superman? Multiverse. But multiverse. But what about Catwoman? Multiverse. Whereas Marvel, especially with the Loki show, is very carefully unwinding the multiverse so everybody can pay attention to it. And, you know, Turbo and I were talking about it. I haven't seen Loki yet, and I probably will hopefully by next week. And he said that basically we already know time's broken because of what happened in Endgame. Because Loki grabbed the Tesseract and disappeared. That's not what happened in the reality we know. In our reality, you know, what was the last Thor movie where he ends up fighting his sister and
Ragnarok,
right?
Ragnarok and, then, and roll.
At the beginning of Infinity War, Loki gets so. It's kind of like Marvel is setting up the multiverse carefully, and DC is just like, nope. Multiverse. But where does it multiverse? And they don't, you know, I think that's more disheartening. I guess, you know, I can accept a miniseries by itself, but it's got to be disheartening for someone who's just not, and I'll say, like, hip to multiverse and the weirdness going on. Well, this Harley doesn't seem to be like the Harley I'm reading in Batman Scooby-Doo multiverse.
See, I don't mind if it's Batman Scooby-Doo. I mind if it's Harley Quinn, the main series, and then Harley Quinn in this miniseries that's also in that art style that's aimed at adults. I can understand the Scooby-Doo books are aimed at kids. Batman stronger.
They're drawn that way.
But with all the Harley Quinn stuff, it's like, well, why doesn't this Harley Quinn match this Harley Quinn match this Harley Quinn? And DC used to be very good about Elseworlds, where heroes are taken from their normal circumstances, blah, 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 blah. Or a book like Kingdom, they would have something where it's 10 years after, blah, you know, this. Even the new Star Trek books, they're not all interconnected. And I'm talking the novels. They're not all interconnected anymore. But they will have historical note. This takes place 5 years after this and 6 years before this sort of thing. You know, I just picked up a new book set in the original series, and it says this is set 6 years after V'ger. Oh, okay, cool. I can understand where this is. I understand where the characters are going to be. I'm not going to start reading and go, wait, what do you mean Kirk's not captain? What do you mean Spock's a captain? What do you mean this is... What? But I think DC is... They expect everybody to have read the press clippings.
What press clippings?
You know, we've got this new miniseries coming out from Chip Zdarsky, which is set in a possible future 6 years after the current blah, 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 blah. But when you pick up the comic, it's just Batman. Superman. You know, it's not somewhere in there where it says set in the future after this. And I, one of the things, as our time is starting to run out, believe it or not, I do keep track of time. Joe, Marvel had different universes when you were running Hot Comics. And I mean, they had the MC2 universe, which is Mary Jane is all... Mary Jane and Peter have been married for a long time, and their kids all grown up and become Spider-Girl. They had the 2099 universe. They had the UK books, which didn't really tie into the Marvel universe. When my feeling is that when people find out that a comic isn't, quote, in-universe, unless it's a special story like an Elseworlds or What If, but if it's, no, this is a series set in a different universe, most people tend to either buy in or just ignore it.
Yeah. Ultraverse, we're looking at you.
Or even the MC2. They had three or four books for a while, but they never really sold all that well. Were there people who, oh, you know, I buy Spider-Man and I buy this, and I'm going to buy the Spider-Girl book too. Or was it very much, well, you know, I'm going to buy the MC2 books, and I'll buy the A2, which is the Avengers thing, and this and that. Or if you're buying the 2099, I'll buy all the 2099 books.
Not really. I mean, people would try them. You know, I think we only had one guy, Jim, who would, he bought every Marvel regardless. Although he didn't buy the Ultraverse. Too expensive. Even when they dropped the price.
Even when they were cheaper than the other comics.
And when they had the crossovers, the obvious crossovers where it was Spider-Man and Prime or Hulk and Prime or whatever. But, I think it was like the old classics. Like you said, a lot of people would pick up the number ones and then drift away. Because certainly they didn't last long.
Now, do you think it's because they didn't like the book or because it was, it's not in the main universe, so nothing matters?
Yeah, there was really no reason to buy them. They just kind of appeared out of nowhere and you were either hip with it or not. You know, it was a case of just because it's a Marvel doesn't mean people are going to jump on board with it.
I could actually point to when the Marvel Zombie died at Schindler's. Because we had the Marvel Zombies and people who would go down the rack and, okay, one of each Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
They may not buy the Epic books, but one of each Marvel. And the thing that killed it was the Marvel UK line. They would buy the Marvel, and then they would kind of look at the Marvel UK book and then skip it. And it was almost like a little switch went in their head that, wait, I don't have to buy every Marvel book. So over time, they would buy fewer Marvel books. They wouldn't buy, oh, you know, because remember every summer, it's six new books we're introducing. Cage and Darkhawk and blah, blah, blah. And they would maybe pick up one of the new books, but they would skip. And I remember seeing, part of it was the price went up from $1 to $1.25 to $1.50 over a 2 to 3 year period. But also it was Marvel was putting out so much stuff that they went, well, if I can't get it all, eh. Now, one of the things that also went away when I worked at Schindler's were the people who would buy two, one to bag and one to read.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever have any of those guys, or was that dead by the time you had your shop?
There was occasional guys like that, but more I'd have guys coming in if like, oh, yeah, this book is hot. I want to buy all 10 of your copies. I'm like, no, I'm limiting you to one. Because the only time I see you is when you want to buy a hot book. And that was probably more on the Image side of things. But yeah, there weren't many doing that. Like you said, you know, buy two. Because they were getting expensive.
Yeah. I think it was when comics went to $1.25 that people finally went, I'm just going to buy one. Because even the first comic shop I went to, you know, they had their printout of your subscription and you would put, you know, the title and then you would put how many you want. And I asked them about that, and they said, oh, yeah, we get a lot of people who, you know, one to buy, one to bag. You know, one to read and one to bag. Excuse me. One to read and one to bag. And I think that a lot of people say, oh, comics don't sell as well as they did in the 80s. Well, I think a lot of the comic collectors who did that kind of cut back. So they're, I would say maybe about a quarter of the people who bought comics did that. So, you know, that's a significant amount. Comics now are $3.99, and back then they were much cheaper. But I also think, you know, as we talk about the long tail, I think your readership is spread out because you don't have the Marvel zombies. It's, you know, I don't buy any Marvel, but I do pick up whatever Jeff Smith is doing, or I pick up whatever Terry Moore is doing, or I still pick up what Dave Sim's doing. Or, you know, I'll pick up the stuff at Dark Horse that I like or Image that I like. I think the audience is much more spread out.
I think comics also aren't the mass media that they were when we remember the Golden Age and Silver Age. It's much more fragmented. I mean, we're publishing comic books, not graphic novels. You're basically a pimple on the buttocks of the publishing world. What's the numbers? And these are numbers that we floated about when we first started our podcast. How many years ago?
11. Here's the thing, 11 Joe.
Years ago.
Here's the thing. I'll well, say that about the monthly.
Let me get you the numbers first. Because the numbers are, okay, how many people at the time? There were 240 million people in America. To get a best-selling novel, you had to sell 3 million. The best-selling comic book maybe skirted 100,000.
And they that's were always, the same as now.
Yeah. If anything, it's gotten worse. You look at the sales more than I do. What's the number one selling comic?
Right now, it's Batman.
And what's the number at it?
They are guesstimating that the monthly on it is between 120 and 140.
Yeah, which is nothing.
Well, that's about the same as when we started. However, the thing to look at, and I've mentioned this a few times, last year, book sales were flat except for young adult graphic novels. Graphic novels were up 30% year over year from 2019 to 2020. They're up again this year. Young adult up about 15% from 2019 to 2020. So comics are moving in a different direction. I think they're moving out of the comic shop, and especially comic shops themselves are changing into, you know, when we go around the Twin Cities, your classic comic shop, like the College of Comic Book Knowledge, is becoming more and more rare. More and more you go to a shop and they've got the new stuff and they've got graphic novel wall like you had. Mind's Eye, that's how they make their money. The new shops are doing more and more of that. They're also getting into board games. Nerdin' Out probably makes more off the toys and the board games than they do the comics. And they're still filling up, but if you go down those two shops we went to in Mankato, both of them, I asked, they make most of their money off board games.
Board comics as a monthly media is not the way of the future. You know, the graphic novels are. We've talked about that already.
Yeah. And board games are really huge right now. I actually stumbled on a, what is it? I can't even remember the name of the group that puts them out. But they're putting out, first off, there are all these video podcasts of people who set up a camera and play a board game. And it's on YouTube, and it's 10 hours of people watch it. And you know, I don't understand people watching someone play a video game. I kind of understand watching someone play a board game because it's like, oh, I can learn how to play this game. But they also do 10 to 20 minute videos of, okay, here's the 10 best family board games. Here's the 10 best strategy board games. Here's the 10 best solo board games. And, you know, I don't have enough people in my life to start getting into it. But boy, when I look at the games and how they're doing, it's like, I could easily see myself get into that. And I can easily see a shop like Nerdin' Out or The Source where people come in and they buy a board game and maybe a graphic novel or two every couple of months, rather than they're there every Wednesday to get their fix.
And The Source has a big Wednesday crew. If you really want to see them, just show up on any Wednesday. And you still, but you, what you also see, it's older guys, not the younger kids. I don't think my kids even care about reading comics. They'll read them if I force them on them. But, you know, it's just, it's one of those things with all the other entertainment options they have. They will, it's a niche market. It was a niche market when I bought my shop way back in 1992. It's never going to be a mass market. All these guys who had comics in Walmart, they're not there anymore. All these guys who had bad idea, good ideas, they kind of fizzled. So,
but you know who is a mass marketer, Joe?
I would imagine anybody online.
It's these guys, our sponsors, NordVPN. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. Yep, you got to protect yourself when you're online. Bunch of bastard coated bastards with bastard filling and a bastard reduction sauce out on the internet, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
But not us.
Not us.
We give you free podcasts like these.
The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose Podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast, and he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. And if you think that I'm on all of these podcasts, you're wrong. Because Scrabbling Across the West is at scrabbling.solitairerose.com, where musician Dave Coffell and his wife Stephanie travel across America and then sitting down to play Scrabble and talk about the day. That's at Scrabbling Across the West, scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha.
And then when you're listening to the podcast, you can actually go over to Joe's eBay page. And he's selling all kinds of stuff, even some of these commie books that we're talking about. So this is Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where he smothers himself in cashew oil and says that he's the new macho man.
Macho man.
No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. We didn't really talk much about it last week, but just some of the different goofy titles that come about. Like, you know, we all know what X-Files are, but Corey, did you ever pick up the -1, -2 limited editions?
I did not.
They were through our good old buddies, American Entertainment. American Entertainment, what the heck were they? They kept this was a place that used to annoy the hell out of us comic retailers, because they had exclusive covers that only they would have. And a lot of it was, in this case, they were signed by the artist Claude St. Aubin. They had, that was the only way you could get it was through their, I don't think it was this website days yet or 1990? Yeah, 1996. So you were either doing mail order.
You would have to mail order. I don't remember if you could actually buy stuff on the internet yet or not.
Not yet. But the problem was is that these guys had like center page spreads in all the magazines, in all the comic books. So there was no way to escape them. And I ran across a couple copies of this X-Files -1, -2. Did not know they were going that way. One was a white limited edition. One was a black. This is back when Topps had the license for X-Files. I think we've talked in the past about Walt Disney's The Scarecrow of Romney Marsh. Oof. Really, really hot title if you can find it. It's hard to find them in really great shape. They only did three issues, 1964 to 65. And, of course, our Patrick McGoohan of The Prisoner fame was Under the Mask. I vaguely remember these shows from The Wonderful World of Disney. And I do believe they re-released the DVDs and Blu-ray, so you can pick them up if you're so inclined. You can't pick up the comic, because I had one, and it priced them fair, but boy, did it go fast. Corey, do you remember Peter Cannon Thunderbolt?
Yes, that was a book that was owned by DC for a little while, but the rights reverted to the original creator, who then sold them over to Dynamite.
Yeah. Number One came out in 1966, which was his first appearance, The Origin of Thunderbolt, and I believe Pete Morrissey.
Yes.
I'm saying that right?
He would sign his art PAM and didn't use his name because he was a police officer who drew comics at night and didn't want the New York police to know that he was moonlighting.
Yeah, no, the comics were not not something that you shared with people. But it didn't change until the original series was just called Thunderbolt with Peter Cannon above the Thunderbolt logo. It picked up the numbering from Son of Vulcan at issue 51. So from issue 51, it went to 60 and then stopped publishing in 1967. And I had a couple odd issues here and there. Modern Comic did the reprints, if you remember that, where in 1978 they just slapped the same a different logo. Instead of Carlton, they just put Modern Comic on it. And, you know, again, originals are pricey, but if you price them right, they disappear. Corey, did you ever read Parts Unknown?
Well, let's go back to Thunderbolt. Take a look at his costume there, Joe. Does that costume remind you of any other comic character from before that time?
I wouldn't know from before that time. It kind of looks a little bit like the 3D man without 3D glasses.
It should look like the original Daredevil from the 40s from Lev Gleason Publications because what it was, Pete tried to purchase the character from Lev Gleason. And while Lev Gleason said, sure, the original, the primary writer artist, Charles Bureau, said no, he wanted a share of the future profits. So Morrissey declined, basically redrew the character, treated it the same as the original Daredevil, and went forward with that. And the problem is that then Lev Gleason kind of lost all rights to everything. And Marvel, I think I've told this story before, the minute that Mark Goodman found out, he went to Stan and said, all right, Daredevil's up for grabs. I want you to take the character, and we're going to use it. And Stan, feeling a little skittish, decided to take the name but change the character rather than just completely lift the character. Although Marvel has done that. The original, the Western Ghost Rider, was published by another company, and when they went belly up, Stan was like, yeah, let's do that. Let's just use that. Dick Ayers is already working here. We'll have him do some more Ghost Rider stories. Nobody will notice.
I like how the Daredevil shows up in Project Superpowers at Dynamite, but he also shows up in Savage Dragon because the character itself is public domain.
And I think at...
Not the Daredevil we know from Marvel.
Yeah, at Dynamite, they call him the Death-Defying Devil.
Yeah,
because they can't put Daredevil on the cover. The thing is, the rights reverted to Pete Morrissey's estate when he died, which is why DC had the character until 2003. Then when he died, because of legalities, the rights reverted back to his estate, and his kids have licensed the character over to Dynamite. I find that really fascinating because all the other Carlton characters just went right over to DC when Carlton went
away. DC did publish a few different titles.
Yes,
but
they had him as a member of the Justice League, too.
Now, that's a way of saying that Corey never did read Parts Unknown because this is the owned by Bo Smith, the only real man in comics, and Brad Gorby. And basically, it's gone through different publishing. Started at Eclipse in, 1995. Went to Image in 2000 when Bo was working there. Basically, what else do you need? You got sexy women in provocative poses and various stages of undress, discussing monsters and wide crack laden dialogue. So I had a set of various ones I put together. Tis gone. Another title. Corey, do you remember when DC Strange Adventures started?
Yes, they did a series in the 50s. And then they did another one in the 2000s. And yep. There's a current one going.
Yeah. The original one went, let's see if I can fire up, 244 issues, 1973. I had a couple of 20 centers in the middle where they were just reprinting from earlier issues. A lot of Adam Strange stuff. But if you happen to be a lucky owner of that number one, it came out cover date, I should say, was August 1950. It's in the $2,000-$3,000 price range, so hop on there. Speaking of another title that jumped around, Tony Daniel had a character called The Tenth. Showed up at Image in 1997. Tenth was basically a monster who's attempting to create an army which to control the world. Well, The Tenth himself isn't the creator, was, but and of course, he was the Tenth monster, and he became a CIA operative whose mission was to infiltrate the bad guy's experimental town, and a lot of good artwork there. I had a couple signed copies from Image. Again, these were the ones that got signed through American Entertainment. So a lot of that, you wonder, it'd be kind of fun to look at the old entertainment ads and see if any of these actually held up any value. We've talked about Femme Force. Femme Force was by AmeriComics, still being published today. First issue way back in 1985, American government decided it wants an all-woman team of superheroes, and that team is Femme Force. Had some of the earlier ones that I picked up in the various dollar stores we pick up, and some guy bought a whole run. Boris Karloff, Tales of Mystery. I think we've talked, I'm having a deja vu moment. Have we talked about this book before?
Probably. It was a Dell / Gold Key. Dell did a lot of these anthology mystery books with that were tie-ins, like Twilight Zone and the Boris Karloff. And
they always had his nice face on the cover. Stories were hit or miss. I read a few of them. It's
interesting,
though.
Didn't go with Thriller, which was the TV series that Boris Karloff hosted at the time, rather than just calling it Boris Karloff's Tales of Mystery.
They had Boris Karloff's Thriller for two issues, and then at three, they changed it over to Tales of Mystery.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to see. They had a couple other ones, Mystery Archives, which was Dark Horse doing it. So, and then they had Williams comic did a one-shot from 67 to 69. It's just was Boris Karloff and really didn't have his face on it or at all. So I'm wondering if that was just a, using his name as a knockoff till they caught him. The final one to talk about is, I believe we talked about it before, Black Diamond from AC Comics. This was a action-adventure film starring Sybil Danning. The comic book adapts her adventures as she infiltrates the villainous Kwanzaa crime cartel and helps foil plans to destroy an orbiting space station. There were five issues published, and I don't know if Black Diamond went on to any other thing beyond American Comics. There are other Black Diamond comics, but that was the one I had a complete set and just sold it as such. Lest you think it's all about the comic books, I sold a few other odds and ends. I had an 8x10 color photo of Sarah Michelle Gellar as Buffy from the Buffy fan club. I sold a little pinback. It was Star Wars with Luke or Han on a Tauntaun. A little worried about it because I sent it off first class mail and the guy tells me he hasn't has it yet, which is fine. If I mail something out and you don't get it, I'll give you a refund after 30 days. I'm not totally heartless. Let's see, what other non-comic? A couple old bumper stickers from my shop. Oh, my God, they killed Kenny. Mr. Hanky, the Christmas Pooh. Only had one of those, though. And if you want to see what other goodies I've got, because I've, I mean, I'm part of what I'm doing with the GCGNSP, the Great Comic Book Graphic Novel Sort and Purge, is I'm discovering I apparently have things I didn't even realize. For example, Corey, have you ever heard of the pulp Startling Stories?
Yes.
Yep.
And it was reprinted. There's a company that reprints pulps. Basically, they reprint them on real nice paper with real shiny covers and sell them for like 15 to 20 bucks each.
Yeah, I used to sell a lot of them at the Hot Comics. I have the first issue from January 1939. It was published by Better Publications, Inc. And although a near mint, they say 50, I would say probably more. This thing, while it's readable, is flaking out to all hell. If you're interested in it, it'll probably be on eBay by the time you hear this podcast, because half the stuff I've talked about, the Starling Stories, the Scud Disposable Assassin, as I sort stuff out, well, I'll talk about it when we get to geeking, because I'm having a lot of fun going through stuff. In the meantime, you can 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I better not use that. Somebody will sue me. Any time of day, any time of night time. Remember, crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where Joe and I plan a gritty reboot of Easy Reader.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk more about bat sex.
No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
There's a couple things I'm freaking on. The first one is that I can't go to the one crazy summer con being put on by the Midwest Comic Book Fans, formerly known as MCBA. This is out at the Mermaid Entertainment Events Center, 2200 Moundsview Boulevard in Moundsview, Minnesota. Go to MidwestComicBookFans.com for more information. It's going to be Saturday, July 31st, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Admission is $5 per person, and they're going to use this all to fire up the old Fall Con, which they're still working on. Things are looking good for that. I'm also going to be missing an event put on by our good buddy Craig Ketter down at Dreamhaven Comics and Books. They're doing a Uncle Hugo's benefit. Larry Correa, I guess I said that, K-O-R-R-E-A-I, I-A, sorry, and Mike Kupari are signing books at Dreamhaven Books on, let's see, that will be Saturday, July 31st at 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Dreamhaven Books over on 3101 East 38th Street in Minneapolis. How this came about, this is a quote from Don Biley, the owner of Uncle Hugo's. Larry has a new novel coming out in less than 2 months, Monster Hunter Bloodlines. This will be $25. And Larry likes to launch his new Monster Hunter novels with a signing at Uncle Hugo's. He really wanted to help Uncle Hugo's this year with a signing, but the problem is there's no building. Got burned down during the riots last year. So I worked a deal out. Again, this is Don talking. I worked a deal out with Greg Ketter at Dreamhaven and with Larry for the signing to take place at Dreamhaven so that the signing can help both stores. You can place a mail order for the new book. Go to www.unclehugo.com and poke around. You'll find it. Or look for the Larry Correa and Mike Kupari signing event done by Dreamhaven Books on Facebook. If you can make it to the signing in person, it will start at 3 p.m. on the 31st. Greg will bring a lot of Larry's backlist books in. Proceeds from the sale of the new hardcover will go to Uncle Hugo's, and proceeds from the sale of the new hardcover will go to Uncle Hugo's. I think they repeated themselves there. Proceeds from everything else will go to Dreamhaven. And then they write, since Don sent that out, they've received word that Mike Kupari, the co-author with Larry on several books, will be, they're also got a forthcoming book called The Family Business, will be joining him for the signing. And I won't get to go to either of them. because I'll be helping my daughter move cross country to go to Reno. And of course, I believe, is that when we're going to run our Geeking Day podcast?
We'll run the Geeking Day podcast and the final Craze sketchbook.
Oh, yeah. And then we're going to start really putting pressure on Butch to cough his up, because I know he's got some stories on his. As we talked about earlier, I can't turn on the AC. Going to get mother blankety blank hot. I'm not too worried about it tomorrow because I got to go to work, but we're doing all that work trying to get the house all nice and tidy. And part of that was the great GCGNSP, but we'll talk about that on the geeking side of things. Because for now, that's pretty much all that I have to freak about. Corey, what you freaking on?
I'm still freaking on Future's End. I'm reading this story, and the thing is, there's interesting stuff in there, but because it's set in the future of the New 52, I know that at the end of the day, none of it came to pass. None of it resonated. And it was all wiped away. And it made me kind of nostalgic for 52. The weekly series that DC did after Infinite Crisis, where it was, okay, we're going to jump ahead a year. Superman doesn't have any powers. Something's going on with Batman. They're not around. All these other heroes are doing stuff. And all the other books will jump ahead a year. And the creative team that they had on that, Mark Waid, Grant Morrison, I believe it was Greg Rucka, and who else was on that? I don't remember. And they brought Keith Giffen in after a while. And I've gone back. I want to go back and read 52, because 52 was just beautifully constructed. It was kind of this weaving in and out of characters where you were following three or four stories as they set up the new Marvel, the new DC universe. And I remember coming out of that going, I am so excited to read DC. They've made these characters more interesting. They've set up their world perfectly. And then within a few years, they hit that reset button again. And then DC has done a couple other of the weekly series. Don't ever read Countdown. Countdown's a goddamn mess. But there's Future's End, and then there was a Batman Eternal. And I just got the Batman Eternal Omnibus a while back.
What'd you think about Trinity?
I thought Trinity was okay. But in the end, it really just kind of fizzled. It was really supposed to be Kurt Busiek, and this was Mark Bagley's first time working at DC. And it really never felt special. And I kind of wish when DC had hit their most recent reset button, they would do something like it. Because 52 was such a great way to, here's our universe, here's how it's set up. To whereas now, it's kind of bits, again, it's bits and pieces and bits and pieces and bits and pieces. There was also a death that we didn't talk about, and I think it's because we had special shows, and I didn't want to drag the show down with other things. David Anthony Kraft passed away about a month ago. He worked at Marvel, came into Marvel an odd way. He was a rock and roll journalist. He worked for Cream Magazine and other magazines and did a story on Marvel and kind of slowly came into Marvel. Working on the black and white magazines, did some editorial stuff on the black and white magazines. He's the one who put together the Beatles magazine that he wrote with George Perez. Which, oh, Marvel, please reprint that. Please reprint that. Please reprint that. Please reprint that. Did a fantastic run on the Defenders. Did tons of licensed books. He was one of those guys who worked in the office and, hey, we got to do a book for Kool-Aid. Now I'll write it. We got to do a book for Planned Parenthood. Now I'll write it. But he is probably best known for a toy that Joe and I both have. He wrote the Spidey Super Stories story with the Thanos copter. And this is how I, you know, he had showed up on Facebook. And if you read his stuff on Facebook, he was so happy to talk with the fans. Very guarded about his life. There were people who knew it, had known him at Marvel and reconnected at on Facebook, did not know he'd gotten married and had a kid. Because he did not talk about his personal life in any way, shape, or form. Was really good about keeping that barrier strong. But when the Thanos copter, when I got myself a Thanos copter, he'd made a joke online about how I didn't get any royalties from this. I don't think it's right. And, you know, joked about it. And I had told him, hey, when I get one, I'm going to send you royalties. He was, oh, that'd be great. Thanks. That's so funny. Well, when I got my Thanos copter, you know, you can send money on PayPal. I sent him a dollar. Said, hey, here's your royalties for the Thanos copter I just got. He actually refused it and said, look, I'm just happy that you got it. But this is such a fun gesture. Thanks so much. We would trade Facebook messages every so often. There were times I would ask him about stuff that happened at Marvel in the 70s. He was so happy to talk about Marvel in the 70s to anybody who would listen. Passed away from COVID, and his wife notified everybody and has created a memorial page where she's going to be sharing stuff from the house and from his life the past few years. And she's kind of said he kept very private, but he and I had talked, and after he passed away, he wouldn't mind if I shared stuff about his personal life online because he was always kind of a little embarrassed about it. And then the last thing I am freaking on, we have had a sixth death from COVID at the group home. We had a client who was there when I started, gosh, 11 years ago. And if you go back and listen to the old episodes, listen to the one where I talk about how G4 was covering the San Diego Comic-Con. And I was at the group home, only one client was home, and she didn't mind what was on TV. So I turned it to G4 to watch the Comic-Con coverage, and she watched it with me. So you could go back to that episode, listen to that. But she got COVID last year, was on a ventilator for a while, was able to come back in September. But never, ever really recovered. She was not able to walk anymore. It had affected her lungs so much that if she were to walk, she wouldn't be able to bring in enough oxygen. So she didn't understand that. So she was always trying to get out of bed because she liked, you know, to get up and sit at her desk and color. But she couldn't do that because she couldn't get up anymore. You know, we got a tray and everything so that she could do her coloring in her bed. But over time, the lack of oxygen, the strain on her heart, the strain on her other organs, she passed away Friday night with her family and staff around. Her brother and his family were there when she passed. And it's why I'm really touchy about COVID and why I really get angry at the people who, well, COVID's not serious. We had six clients pass away from COVID since the outbreak, and it was one staff who brought it in the house. One staff who went to a bar that somebody had in their basement and was like, oh, the bars are closed, but this COVID stuff ain't real. Come on over. She got infected, brought it into three of the houses. It's real. And this Delta variant is serious. This is probably the most viral of the variants. If you don't have your immunization, if you haven't gotten your Fauci-ouchie yet, go get it. Because this Delta variant, again, maybe you'll be okay. There are the people who say, oh, it only affects, you know, 0.5% of people. Joe, you've heard of polio, right?
Oh, yeah.
Polio affected 0.5% of people. And we did everything we could to get rid of it. because 0.5% when you get into millions of people, that's a lot of people. The pandemic, they say, is over, not because it's not spreading anymore, not because people are getting sick anymore. It's because they have beds in the intensive care unit for you now. If you're listening to this, please get your vaccination. Read up on the science. Don't go to YouTube. Don't go to your one guy in high school who did graduated and has been building cars in his garage, or you know the one guy who flunked science. Go read what the CDC says. Go read what the World Health Organization says. Get your vaccination, because this could hurt people you care about. It could spread to people who work with people that other people care about. It's a serious thing. The rest of the world is begging for this vaccine. And here in the U.S., we're having to give people cars and lottery tickets to get up to 70% vaccination. And now that I've brought the show down, Joe, it's time to build it back up for the end. What are you geeking on?
Well, how was your Father's Day, Corey?
I slept because I had been at the group home for a lot of that. Cool. And by the time I got home, it was okay. I think I'm going to watch a movie. Yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to lay down. And I got to tell you, my dreams were awesome.
Well, that can help. Redheads and pie.
No, it was a murder mystery. I had a murder mystery dream. My dreams
My Father's Day was pretty good, too. I actually did what you're supposed to do. Granted, your folks are in Illinois.
Sleep in and have and your kids give you a tie.
God knows where your son is now, because we haven't heard anything about him in a while. But I went over, visited my dad. My brother and sister were there as well. And when we finished up there, I went home, and Dana and Holly come over, and we went out to dinner out at the place she works at. They had the golf course there. And so that was kind of fun. It's kind of nice connecting. You know, but my dad's getting up there in age, so there's always in the back of my brain, this could be the last one. But I always want to make sure to get there. Heard from Paul down at Heroic Goods and Games. He cryptically said over the weekend that there'll be a announcement coming up that you may get your wallet ready for this weekend. And of course, by this weekend, it means last weekend. So you guys missed it. See what happens when you're not hip on the eBays and the Facebooks. And so I told him, hey, let us know. We'll blab it in our podcast, as opposed to we drove by and left no smudges on his window. And Paul, of course, said, when to think this whole time you could have been talking about the website I built by hand with almost 20,000 entries and easy curbside pickup. And I told him, well, we did. We just like leaving those smudges on windows. So if you're interested, head over to heroicgoodsandgames.com. And he's got a very easy laid out website, so you can jump into comic books. You can jump into his sale clearance, if you're looking for Star Wars cards, video games, or maybe role-playing games, or board games. We were talking about board games earlier, so that should be pretty cool. I did do a little geeking on Monday. I've got the MCBF's flyer, so I ran around and tried to drop stuff off. I stopped down at, hang on a second, my Facebook. Got to fire up the old... just because I'm in the basement doesn't mean you can't disconnect. Let's see. Comic shops. Where was I? I was down in South St. Paul. I believe it's Dragon's Vault. And I stopped by. A little slow. But, you know, it was Monday. What do you expect? So I kind of browsed around. Did pick up a copy of Ant number 12. The all-new Eric Larson blockbuster. Speaking of which, there's the dynamic Daredevil right on the cover, Corey. This is where he took over the Ant, and I guess coming out, we talked about it in our preview show. So I figured I might as well. I have no chance of finding 1 through 11 because they are like high in the stratosphere expensive. From there, I stopped down at Cedar Cliff Collectibles. Our good buddy Steve Brown, the man with of Renown was down there with a frown, and we talked a bit, and I did pick up the two omnibuses that you picked up at the college when we were out geeking. He still had them. I didn't see
them. Does he have any new ones?
He had a bunch of the monster ones, which I think you've already bought.
Yeah, I've got those.
And tons of paperbacks, things like that. But I think, like you said, Corey, most of the omnibuses are being made to order. And Marvel's, they realize that if there's a demand, they'll just republish it. So he actually mentioned you by name. He said, yeah, Corey never comes by to visit. And I said, Corey doesn't really leave his home much.
Corey works all the time.
Yeah. But you got to go spend some money. And I've actually bought a few other things from Steve. So, and I'll probably end up going back. I did at that time. I know the boys at the con went to go visit our friend down at Mind's Eye Comic. And so I decided I would take a rundown of issues needed. Guess what, Corey?
They have issues.
Well, one of them is they're closed on Mondays.
Oh.
I'll have to go back maybe next Tuesday. I was going to go today, but I will get to my next geeking thing. The last place I stopped was the Triple B Collectibles in St. Paul. Met the other owner. You know, he's talking about guys bringing in comic books and stuff. And I said, well, anytime you got them, let me know because I'll come take a look at them. But he's doing the same thing I'm doing. He's doing the great comic book checkout to make sure everything's figure out what you have, you know. And I picked up some postcard Ultra Pros, you know, because I've got different postcards I want to save and things like that. But most of my day was spent doing the aforementioned GCGNSP, the Great Comic Book Graphic Novel Sort and Purge. And I can honestly say, for the most part, I have all the comic, most of the, maybe 90, probably, yes, they're mostly in my garage. The only ones that are not, again, the aforementioned omnibuses, my Sandman collection, which my daughter, who's going to Reno, is currently has. I got a pile behind me of things that I've got to price out to see if I'm going to eBay them or if I'm just going to donate them to the charity booth that I'll be running at the FallCon when it pops up. I've been putting my runs together. Like, I've got the new Avengers by Hickman, the Avengers, the Dark Avengers all in one spot, Strangers in Paradise. I do have the Bone colored slipcase edition. And then I also have the individual hardcovers. I got all my Cerebus set up. I'm only missing the one where he goes on length talking about the Torah. And I don't really know if I'm going to pick that up or not. I've been finding all sorts of other things. I did find I have one of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen hardcovers because now I can try to piece that together. We talked about it last podcast. Some of it's DC, some of it's Top Cow, whatever, I'll figure it out. I'm slowly getting that together. Most of the graphic novels in the garage, I've got them separated A to Z, and then I'm going to go through them. And most of them I'm going to store in short boxes and then just put them away. And I'm actually going to write down which ones I'm missing. For example, I've got Fables and Jack of Fables all figured out. In Fables, I'm only missing three issues, or I should say three graphic novels. Jack of Fables, I'm missing three. I've got my Chew sitting over there. I haven't figured out which ones, but I go like 1, 2, 3, and 10. So I seem to be missing a few there. But just having a blast going through. And occasionally I stop and I read something when I should be, you know, putting everything out. I have a copy of Space 1999 Aftershock and Awe. These are the same guys who did another book I love, Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes, Gaska, Moro, Hugo, and Mickey. Basically what it is, it's what happened on Earth when the moon was ripped out of orbit. Quite a lot, as you could imagine, especially with the tides giving in. And the one thing that they did, the little bit of continuity, retronuity, if you call it, apparently he had either a fiance, John, you know, the character played by Martin Landau, she was either a fiance or I don't think it was a wife. I got to reread this, but they do a lot of stuff talking about what happened on Earth. You know, it's a fun book if you can find it. This was done by Arcadia Black Label. And again, it's called Space 1999 After Shock and Awe. So I'm actually very proud of myself. I did not stop and read too many things as I want to do when I'm sorting comics, because you start going through and hey, I think maybe I'll read this entire run of Night Nurse or something like that. I also didn't mix in the my daughter's graphic novels. My oldest daughter's easy because half of them were mine, you know, Invisibles, Filth, things like that. Holly has a different set of graphic novels. You know, a lot of them are mine, but she, you know, she's like, yeah, keep these separate, because when they decide to move out, hopefully in December, knock on fake. Well, actually, for a desk here, I have a card table that has a little fluffy, you know, the little soft stuff on it. So ooh, I got my fluffy printer, I got my scanner, I got my laptop, I got my phone. And more importantly, I've got my reading glasses and magnifying glasses, because I'm getting to be that age. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited. Now, of course, I'm starting my work cycle, which is Wednesday through Saturday. Next week, I'll go through the one thing I discovered. I have more books than graphic novels. And I've got to go through and really take a close look. I mean, yeah, I've got things like, you know, Jay Leno's book. I got books from William Shatner, from George Carlin. I've read them. Am I really going to reread them? I've had a bunch of books from my college years that I'm never going to reread. I've been throwing away previews, well, recycling previews catalogs from 2016. You're kind of like, that was back. Remember when DC had their magazine that they gave out with previews?
Oh, yeah.
And then Image had a magazine too, Image First. And Image actually ran Walking Dead strips. So there's a demand for it. I don't know if there's a demand for the DC ones, but you know me, I'm not going to throw them out without checking it. So, but yeah, I got to go through the books. And ideally, the goal is to get this all done before we take our trek cross country to help Dana get to college. Oh, by the way, if you are fans of the Little Abner comic strip and the Kitchen Sink reprints thereof, I did find a bunch. They're in like the teens, you know, 18, 19. I've got the one where he gets hitched and the one where they meet the schmoo. So if you're interested in any of that stuff that I've blabbed about, you know, give me a quick PM through however you want. Corey dropped our email and all that fun stuff. Or if you don't, eventually it's going to be on the eBay, so you know how to get a hold of it all. Because I'd rather it be in your garage than mine. That's pretty much it for me. Corey, what you excited about? What's got you geeking?
One of my favorite groups on Facebook. I know people trash Facebook and don't like it, et cetera, et cetera. One of my favorite groups on Facebook is called the Men's Adventure Paperbacks of the 20th Century. And I'm going to tell you why. Someone posted this, hoping you guys can help me out. In 1977, I was in seventh grade. I started a book from the junior high library, but never finished it. It was a spy novel with an American agent going into Red China. The cover had a yellow background and featured the Schnaufelfuhrer variation of a broom handle Mauser on it. It's a gun. I think Bamboo was in the title, but I'm not sure. The agent knew karate, and this was mentioned prominently in the first part of the book, I remember, reading the line, karate was developed to defend against knives. The book was not new, so it was probably written in the 60s, and it was paperback. Joe, what do you think the odds are that people knew what that book was?
That group probably pretty good.
He posted it an hour ago. He had an answer within 5 minutes. He had another answer a minute after that, another answer a minute after that. I know comics that if somebody explained a comic to me like that, I'd still have to spend some time going, the hell? What would that be? But nope, these guys, they know their stuff. They know their obscure men's adventure novels. And it's so much fun to read. You know, these are people who, if it was published by Pinnacle, Leisure, Zebra, any of those men's adventure books, like The Executioner, The Destroyer, The Death Merchant, Nick Carter, Killmaster, The Penetrator, Edge, all of those books. These guys know them backward, forward, upside down, and even people who wrote those books. I can't even tell you how many people who wrote Executioner books are in there, because and the creator of The Executioner, Don Pendleton, who passed away, his wife is in there answering questions. Just a great resource for those 60s and 70s and even into the 80s adventure books. I've been watching Joe Bob Briggs, The Last Drive-In. Most of the movies he shows are, you know, crap. But one of the movies he showed is probably the best horror slash zombie movie I have seen in 20 years. Joe, have you heard of Train to Busan?
No, I haven't.
Train to Busan is a Korean zombie movie. And the gist of the story is that a man has to take his daughter, a man who's a fund manager, is taking his daughter to his wife because his visitation time is up. So they get on a train and a zombie outbreak has taken place. That is all I am going to tell you, other than the fact that even Joe Bob Briggs cried during this movie. And he talked about, I'm not somebody who cries during movies, but if you get to the end of this movie and you don't cry, you're not a human being. It is a fantastic movie. Treats the genre completely differently. Subverts your expectations constantly. I cannot recommend this movie enough. I'm not a huge horror guy. I'm not one of those guys who would buy Fangoria, but I am a zombie movie fan, and this is one of the best ones in 20 years. Probably my favorite zombie movie not done by George Romero. Comic-wise, I have been reading bunches of stuff. I got caught up on the new Guardians of the Galaxy and really liked it. The first 12 issues kind of is a standalone story that sets up everything for the new Guardians of the Galaxy and the Last Annihilation story. It's by Al Ewing, who is really big into the Marvel cosmic stuff, has seeds that he plants and books that pay off later and later and later. And there's, you know, as I'm reading Guardians of the Galaxy, one of the things I like about it, each issue can be read as a regular comic. Remember back in the 70s, even if a story was continued, you still felt like you got a full comic book? This is a lot like that. He uses Nova better than anybody has since Marv Wolfman. Really, really good stuff. And does not fall back on, well, I'm just going to rehash what Jim Starlin did that a lot of people do. Nope, he's taken these characters in new directions. Absolutely love it. The first issue of DC's big new crossover, Infinite Frontier, came out. And it does all the stuff that I say DC needs to do. When a scene changes, it tells you what Earth it is. It identifies each of the characters. It lets you know what's going on. It fills you in on the backstory. It's got a great conceit, and that is that everybody in the DC universe after the death metal knows that there's a multiverse. Except, you know, there are some people who don't believe it's real. But some of those people who don't believe it's real are in the wrong universe. Really good first issue. It's a six-part miniseries. And I'm hoping that because it's a six-parter, they don't drag it out long. I don't want to spoil any of the surprises, but man, there are some really fun surprises. Especially there's one scene that ties right into Crisis on Infinite Earths in a way where you're going to go, oh, crap. And it's fun to have books where you do that. It's been a long time since I've had a old crap moment when reading a comic. I think the last time was when the Anti-Monitor showed up in Infinite Crisis. And the problem with that was then the Anti-Monitor just never did anything. What a waste when they brought back the Anti-Monitor. Here's this character who destroys universes. And what does he do? Well, he just kind of stands there. Doesn't do anything. But I'm hoping that Infinite Frontier, it's also kind of going to be your introduction to how DC treats the multiverse, according to the press clippings. So what I'm hoping is that coming out of this, DC starts labeling their other universes. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Nice.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
How many Lowe's could Rob Lowe rob if Rob Lowe could rob Lowe's? Ah, screw it. Corey, hit my music. Funk is on a roll.
Done, bitches!